This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Welcome back to Power Business, coming to you live from the National Results Center here in the city of Tshwane. We are monitoring the election results. Up to 84%, according to the IEC's website, have been captured for now. And of course, the big talking points are the big metros that seem to be in direction of being governed through coalition structures. No single party seems to have been able to convince the citizens of many of these metros, with the exception of Cape Town and Buffalo City, that they should be the ones that run it unilaterally. So it then means they need to get into difficult conversations with other political parties, some calling themselves kingmakers and others simply saying, well, we're the ones that you need to convince, so come and make us know. Let us know what it is that you're putting on the table. Very interesting conversations and very interesting dimensions, obviously, particularly ahead of the 2024 general election, which a lot of people are now looking at and say maybe that will be time when the African National Congress may have to look at a country that it doesn't govern with the same clout that it's had since 1994. Very interesting dimensions that are developing here. We'll definitely keep you updated with the results as they trickle in. We anticipate that by the time we get to 6 a.m. tomorrow, most of the results will be in and we'll have a very clear picture of what it looks like, particularly in the big metros up here in Gauteng, where there seems to be a lot of conversations that are about to take hold. Speaking of what needs to happen next, we joined on the line by Wasim Karim, the Chief Executive Officer of the National Youth Development Agency, to talk about all matters relating to young people. If you'd like to chip in, we are on 0861 987 000. We're also available at Power FM 987 there on Twitter. I would like to engage with you. Mr. Karim, good evening to you, and I hope you voted as a young person.
Good evening, Kaya. Yes, I was up early on Monday morning to make sure we cast our votes at the voting station.
Thank you very much for that. More importantly, why did other young people like you not go to the votes? What's your thinking about that?
Yeah, so I think, Kaya, I take a bit more balanced view on the issue. I think generally the viewpoint is that we jump to voter apathy amongst young people as a result of the socioeconomic conditions that young people in South Africa find themselves in, particularly high levels of youth unemployment. And I do think that we should never discount the role that that plays. But I do think we also need to take a bit more of a balanced view on the issue, right? So first, if we compare to some of our global counterparts, we find that our youth voting trends of about 65% of young people not voting is very much on par with developed democracies like the United States, the United Kingdom, Canada as well. Right? That does not mean that we should aim for low participation. So there should be an active democracy and you want young people to participate. But I think if we draw some lessons from particularly the United States in the most recent election, 2020, whereby by making it easier for people to vote, you drive up the number of people who actually turn out to vote. Let me give you some practical examples about that, right? We know, for one, voter registration ultimately informs voter turnout. Now, if you had looked at the registration numbers, you would have already known a few weeks back that the turnout of young people was going to be shockingly bad, because the number of people registered, young people registered, was half that of 2019. Now, by making it a bit easier for young people to register, I think you could start to improve voter turnout. And I think these are the things that IEC and the government need to look at. For example, when you get your first ID book when you turn 18, why are you not added to the voters' roll just then? You know, why is the IEC not doing more rollout or outreach to young people on campuses, at schools around the time they turn 18, outside of elections? Because I think once you start to get people more registered, you'll start to see voter turnout. And then on election day as well, again, the United States, when usually you saw a large degree of increasing in voting numbers by making it easier for people to cast their vote. Other factors like the election being on a Monday, that of course also plays a role. But again, we do come back to the socioeconomic conditions, and then also the political choices that are in front of young people. You know, the young people form the largest voting bloc in South Africa. And I think it'd be fair to say that none of the political parties are capitalizing on that youth dividend, which really could swing an election, you know. But none of them seem to really have manifestos that speak to the needs and wants of young people.
Speaking of the needs and wants of young people, I suppose at the end of the day, we're going to have to deal with the big elephant in the room. The jobs crisis is probably one of the things that makes young people feel perhaps that the current political system is not responsive to the needs of young people. And if none of the political parties can put together a cogent manifesto that says this is how we're going to get jobs, well, of course, young people are going to say, well, until something that talks to my material issues shows up, I'm going to chill at home.
Yep, and I think the jobs crisis, I mean, you can't separate civic participation from economic participation. When you're engaged as a citizen economically, you have access to a network, a social network, a professional network, that makes you more of an active citizen. Yeah, you're more alive to the challenges and to the issues that the country faces. So I think that definitely plays a role, and as long as we lock young people out of the labor and the economic market, we'll continue to disenfranchise them.
Now, how do we unlock those opportunities? How do we get them into the job market? I imagine over the past few years and even maybe over the past few administrations, many ideas have been mooted. It doesn't look like many of them are working because here we are speaking about millions of young people locked out of the system.
Yeah. So, I mean, we spoke about this when we chatted last week, you know, and I think we agree that at the top of it all, we need to get this economy in South Africa going, and you need to solve many of the macro challenges that you're facing, particularly crises like the energy supply crisis, you know, high levels of corruption that influence sentiment and deter foreign direct investment. Those are major issues that need to be sorted out, right? I think the recent election results will hopefully be awakening for many of the political parties about what it needs to do to take and grow this economy. You know, I mean, I argue that a lot of economic development starts at local government level. If you don't have proper roads and infrastructure, you know, you're never going to drive investment into this economy. So I think that's one element. I think the second thing is that there are policies which have worked. The Youth Employment Tax Incentive, for one, where you're able to create sort of the right incentives for business to employ young people, you are able to create opportunities and jobs for them. I think while public employment has many challenges associated with it, it does serve as a good buffer in the economy for young people, particularly to give them entry-level experience and entry-level jobs. I think we've seen with the Youth Employment Service, for example, how you are able to tap into existing policy like broad-based black economic empowerment and create jobs at scale for young people. And I think the matter that I'm talking to you about tonight, the revitalization of the National Youth Service Program, again represents important steps in the right direction to start resolving the youth unemployment crisis.
Talk us through the National Youth Service Program. I mean, what are the mechanics? Is it going to be the game changer in relation to the youth unemployment crisis?
So let's talk about a context to youth service in South Africa. Yeah? Youth service has existed since the late 1990s. It's gone through various iterations and variations. But largely, service at its core is the opportunity for young people to use their energies and their passions to offer service to their communities and to their countries, to be able to develop their skills and their employability while doing so, but also to be able to have an income transfer program to young people. Yeah, I think any country, and many countries have used service, from the United States and their Teach for America program, Germany, the Asian economies, but every country wants to inculcate into its young people an ethos of citizenship, build values in them, give them a taste for adventure, and build the culture and habits of work. Yeah? And youth service is an excellent opportunity to be able to do that while also being able to solve many of the social conditions that we find in our community. Let me just give you one example about that. Is a lot of times we lambast about how public schools have lost their after-school sports, arts, culture, debate, chess programs. So through a youth service program where young people are serving other young people, you could almost revitalize those programs in schools not only benefiting the young people who are doing the service, but providing a community benefit, yeah, in a way that improves young people's mental health, their physical health, but also gives them a pathway to economic opportunity. So that's really what informs the revitalization of the National Youth Service Program. And I don't remember where government has backed youth service in such a big way as this. I mean, our target is an intake of 30 to 35,000 young people on the program in early 2022. Right now, we're issuing a call for proposals to the non-state sector to submit innovative proposals that can show either as a lead agency or as a consortium how they could meaningfully engage 3,000 young people in service activities in communities. Really also reaching out to the non-state sector and many good projects which have already been implemented in communities and assisting with scaling those programs.
Yeah, when we talk about, you know, the call that has been made, I mean, the intention is to obviously try to spread the awareness as wide as possible. What type of organizations are you looking to partner with?
Yeah, so specifically we're looking for not-for-profit organizations or community-based organizations. They must have their compliance with the Department of Social Development up to date to be able to do so. They can apply either as an individual organization or as a consortium. And the consortium is really also to encourage collaboration within the NGO sector, yeah? To encourage organizations to work together with one another across sectors and across geographies, because I think achieving geographical reach is something that's very important to the NYDA and our partner in this program, the Jobs Fund and the President. In addition, they must be able to comply with general government requirements around audited financial statements, having their tax compliance up to date, being listed on their central supplier database. We have specified a few sectors, like I've mentioned, sports, arts, culture, recreation, digital mapping and digital skilling of young people. But also we want CBOs and NPOs to come with their own creativity and innovation to the program, feed that into us, because really we're not the expert on everything youth development. We want to hear about that creativity that a non-state sector can bring to National Youth Service.
This project falls within the bigger, you know, umbrella of all the initiatives that are being undertaken in one form or another, particularly involving the NYDA. What other programs do you have that are sort of trying to assist young people earn and learn their way through this economy?
Yeah, so I think the NYDA specifically has really had a focus on micro enterprises for young people. You know, young people who want to establish their own initiatives, but don't know where to start. They might need training. They might need a level of business development support. They might need that initial startup grant to get the business going. So the NYDA's youth micro enterprise support services are there on hand for young people who want to pursue an entrepreneurship journey or a self-employment journey. And we're not in this alone. We have close linkages in regions with a small enterprise finance agency, with a small enterprise development agency, many private sector partners. So young people who want to get involved in that program, I mean, can visit the NYDA website. We're now fully digitized, so they can access any product or service online, in person, or through the phone. I think the presidency and the Department of Basic Education have recently done the recruitment for the teacher assistant and the Basic Employment Education Initiative, which has been extended for another year. And you will see the Department of Employment and Labor has made a call more to innovative proposals that are also catalytic sort of game changers in the youth unemployment space. You'll see a number of calls going out over the next couple of months for these kind of things, broadly funded under the banner of the Presidential Employment Stimulus and the Youth Employment Intervention. So we'll keep our friends in the media abreast of these initiatives as we roll them out. And young people are also encouraged to keep visiting the website of the NYDA, so they have access, as well as our social media pages, so they have access to this important information.
Wasim, we'll take a short break. Thereafter, I want to speak to you briefly about some of the micro challenges that young people have in actually even accessing some of these opportunities that you've just spoken about. Now, short break first, though.
Power Business with Kaya Sitole
on Power 98.7.
Welcome back. We are still coming to you live from the IEC's National Results Center here in the city of Tshwane. We're tracking the results as they come in. They come in slowly, but when they do come, they obviously do tend to trickle in with a bit of a spike. We're close to over 80% now, actually. I think we're approaching 90% of the results being recorded already, which means that soon enough, we will be reaching that 100% benchmark. And thereafter, the horse trading behind the scenes is going to start as people try to figure out how to govern together, hopefully for the next 5 years. And the history of what we've seen is that most of them aren't going to last those 5 years. But that's a story that we're going to track later on. We're still talking to Wasim Karim, the Chief Executive Officer of the National Youth Development Agency. He was giving us insights into a program that government has put together that's trying to assist many young people transition into the world of work and the world of learning. We do know that we've got a youth unemployment crisis where far too many young people have just simply never been able to transition into this. So, of course, any opportunity that gives them a chance to get in is to be welcomed. Wasim, one point that has just been raised here on my WhatsApp is the question of duration. You've said to us that you're trying to sort of engage, get every organization to engage at least 3,000 young people. The question is for how long, because the durability of those opportunities is equally important.
Yeah, thanks, Kaya. So maybe just before I answer that, I should also mention that the term sheet for the implementing agents opened on Friday, the 29th of October, and it closes on the 25th of November. When you mentioned duration, it just triggered my mind there. So I think the National Youth Service has been conceptualized as a 12-month program because it was funded through the stimulus. We have secured funding for an initial six-month program for young people, but we have good faith that it will run as a 12-month program for young people. You know, the one thing, Kaya, that we've been strong in speaking about is that, and it could be a bit of a controversial issue, but the one thing we've said is that we want youth service to be aspirational to young people. And what we mean by that is, we want young people to feel confident in their ability to apply to be a youth service participant, but equally we want them to feel success when they're selected to be a part of the National Youth Service. It should be an honor and a privilege to participate in that kind of program. But in addition to that, we really want to enter this program with a contract between the young person, government, and civil society. See, a door is being opened for a young person here, right? And government has a commitment to ensure that the young person has a quality experience on the program, that they are engaged in meaningful service, which I think we've seen is not always present in public employment programs, that they receive their income transfer on time. But equally, it's important to set the expectation for a young person, you know, about the type of skills they need to build for themselves during the program, the resilience and the efficacy that we expect from them, the issues around soft skills, you know, keeping time and understanding how to spend your budget. So very much so, if we have that two-way commitment, we are actively as government going to track the young people that enter the youth service program and exit into more sustainable opportunities, because we don't want this to be another program that is short-term in nature for the young, for young people. We want there to be opportunities on the other side of it. Yeah. What I think we must also accept is that while we wait for economic growth, many young people will have to enter the world of self-employment. And building the kind of character in youth service programs that allows them to be self-employed post a youth service experience is also critical if we are going to both meet each other's expectations. Yeah.
Now, Wasim, even opportunities like this do not come without challenges for young people. Somebody might be sitting, listening at home saying, oh God, I have to put together a CV, I have to put an email, I have to travel to deposit my form somewhere else. Those types of hurdles associated with looking for even the few opportunities that do exist, they're a problem for young people, aren't they?
Yes, indeed. I think we've always spoken about the fact that there are barriers in the economy that young people face. Yeah, transport, data, you've mentioned many of the others. We alongside these interventions that we've put in, we've spoken about the National Pathway Management Network, SAYouth.mobi, you know, which is a network of networks, a platform for young people to be able to build a profile for themselves inclusively and for free. It comes at no data cost to the young person. It works on smartphones, it works on feature phones. It has access to learning courses that young people can do for free. It allows them to build a CV for themselves. It requires them to travel no distance to be able to access opportunities. So really, we're using the National Pathway Management Network, NSAU, to support young people in exactly that, to remove the barriers to work seeking. And it's been stress tested through the Basic Employment Education Initiative. But what it also has is using a tech-based platform to use algorithms to better assess young people in their skills. There are skills that employers require sometimes that are not visible on paper, matric certificates or qualifications, you know. But there are skills that young people possess that are not arbitrarily assessed by employer competence tests, where young people can perform in jobs, right, if they're given the right mentorship and support. So really, all of these programs are being supported by the backbone of the National Pathway Management Network, really to make these experiences more accessible, particularly to vulnerable and marginalized young people.
Yeah, definitely a lot of things that need to be fixed in the short term in order for us to get closer to sort of fixing this particular crisis, because I imagine that it's going to be a talking point beyond today and maybe all the way up to 2024 in the general election, assuming that we actually get there in one piece as a country. And I think obviously, Wasim, just before we close off, just a reminder of if the companies that are in the NPO sector would like to onboard and be part of this program, how do they actually make their voice heard before the deadline on the 25th of November.
Yeah, thanks, Kaya. So all of the information related to the program is on the NYDA website. There's a link to the National Youth Service. You can also find it on the Jobs Fund website or on any of our social media pages. We're running a series of briefing sessions in the form of masterclasses to assist NPOs who are interested in applying. There's also a detailed brochure which sets out the program. A set of frequently asked questions which can assist implementing agents. So really all of that information is available. But if implementing agents are still struggling to access, they're welcome to contact the NYDA through our call center or also contact the Jobs Fund or email us through any of our email addresses that are visible on the website. Yeah.
All right. Thank you very much for that. That is Mr. Wasim Karim, the Chief Executive Officer of the National Youth Development Agency.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.